Okay, welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News. I'm joined tonight, this morning, by San Francisco Chronicle Warriors beat writer,
Hanno Retorno. It's actually 1:13 a.m.
It is.
You need to get your computer updated.
It's been a long day. It's trade deadline day. We took a ten and a half hour flight for some reason from New York back to San Francisco, and we just got to.
Which is a really good idea on trade deadline day to have a 10 and a half hour commute.
Yeah, it's a learning lesson for everybody involved today. All right, so we're just going to talk about everything that happened at the trade deadline. We're going to talk. I had a quick breakdown on my reactions on the D'Angelo Russell trade. We're going to flesh that out today. We're going to hit some of the other things that happened. Glenn Robinson, Alec Burks were traded. The Warriors filled out the rest of their roster while we were like basically on the Southwest flight back. And so while our computers were dying, we were filing stories about that. But you know what? Let's just get right into it. And my first – there's a lot of takes out there, but whether or not Andrew Wiggins is going to fit, whether or not the Warriors made the right move, whether or not they jumped the gun and maybe should have waited for the summer. But, Connor, what I'm thinking right now is – boy, did D'Angelo Russell win in all of this? Did he not? I mean, he played this perfectly. Over the summer, he was wooed by the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves did not have the cap space to offer him a max contract. The Warriors come swooping in with their own max contract offer on the heels of Kevin Durant's decision to go to Brooklyn. And so he gets his max contract. 7 months later, he's traded to where he actually wanted to go, which was in Minnesota to play with his best friend, Karl-Anthony Towns, for the first organization in his career who actually wanted him for him,
yeah.
Right? An organization that really covets him. And so he gets his max contract. He ends up where he wants to be, and he's playing with his friend, and he gets to be the face of a franchise now as their main ball handler. Yeah. Well, yeah, as their co-face with Karl-Anthony Towns, his best friend, as the main ball handler, it kind of feels like everything just kind of came up D'Angelo Russell, so to speak.
Yeah, and anyone who hasn't already should go watch that video on Timberwolves, the Timberwolves Twitter account, where it's of him getting off the plane in Minneapolis, and Karl-Anthony Towns is greeting him with a number 0 D'Angelo Russell Timberwolves jersey, and you have members of the front office, coaching staff, and D'Angelo gets off the plane, and he looks at everyone and says, "Hey, fam," you know, you can tell he's genuinely close to these people, not just Karl-Anthony Towns, but other members.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time with this organization over the summer.
And then he walks into the airport, and there's dozens of people waiting for him, and you could just see that look in his eyes. He said, "This is a movie." It feels like he's finally found a place that he can have his career, which you wrote that great story last month about how he's really the journeyman all-star in the NBA, and hopefully he's kind of finding some footing for himself. But, you know, obviously we cover the Warriors, so my concern at this point is not what happens with D'Angelo Russell, but what this means for the Warriors.
Well, what did you think about the D'Angelo Russell experiment? I mean, there was a lot of there's a lot of opinions out there. We really only got 74 minutes of Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell playing together after Steph broke his hand in the fourth game of the season. So it was tough, but I do think that there were encouraging signs along the way, even when Curry was out. I mean, Steve Kerr talked recently about how he was encouraged by D'Angelo Russell's ability to play off of Draymond Green and things, and I always felt that that was the silent stagger. That was the one that nobody was talking about, was actually that D'Angelo Russell and Draymond Green would have a hard time playing next to each other, because whenever Steph Curry didn't have the ball in previous seasons, it was Draymond Green quite often that had the ball. And if that's going to be the case, then what happens with D'Angelo? Is he now your third ball handler in a lot of respects? So I thought that was encouraging, but ultimately the Warriors decided that they wanted to pull the trigger on this thing and just sort of abort ship and go ahead in a new direction. But what did you think about the Russell experiment generally through, you know, the first half of the season?
I mean, I honestly thought it was as good as you could expect it to be. And I think people who are slamming Russell and calling this a failed experiment maybe had unrealistic expectations. I mean, you look at his numbers offensively, he did everything you would ask him to do. He's putting up career numbers. He's being pretty efficient. I think over the course of the past couple months, he kind of figured out how to find his spots in the Warriors offense. And like you said, play off Draymond and play off the ball a little bit more. His catch and shoot numbers were good, you know.
Guys in the locker room liked him too.
Yeah, and I think culturally he was a fit. I think he's actually more of a leader than I thought he was. Yeah. He's a true, when he was injured, he was a true cheerleader from the sideline, and young guys seemed to really take to him. And I was personally impressed with him as a person, you know, as a guy who kind of came in with a polarizing reputation, kind of going back to his Lakers days. So I don't think that was the issue. To me, the big issue was just he's horrible defensively. And that was never going to change. And I think they had some hope that he could at least be okay. Because especially once you get Steph back, you know what Steph is defensively. You need him to at least be decent. And he was one of the worst defenders in the NBA. And that really never got better over the course of the season. I think if you look at his defensive rating, it's down there in the bottom 10 players in the entire NBA.
Well, this team has an ideal that they want to find, right? An ideal lineup, an ideal type of rotation, ideal type of perimeter rotation. We look at what made the Warriors for that dynasty part of their of that era, but it was because they were so obviously it was because of Steph first and foremost, but after that it was because they were so versatile on the perimeter, and they value that more than anything. They turned down Kevin Love from Minnesota because they appreciated Klay Thompson's versatility too and his ability to space the floor. And that versatility was not something that D'Angelo Russell provided. He kind of locked them in. And if we've seen anything from Steve Kerr and Bob, they don't like to be locked into certain things, certain lineups, right. Certain machinations. They've been able to exploit that against Portland in playoff after playoff because they're locked into a backcourt that is subpar defensively with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And they were able to exploit that in the finals against the Cavaliers when they had to have one of their best players, Kevin Love, on the floor as much as they could, but the Warriors were able to exploit him too, and they were locked into some certain lineups that they couldn't get out of that had some real faults that the Warriors were able to, again, exploit. And I don't think they ever wanted to be in that position. And they probably felt like to get to where they wanted to be, to beat the Clippers, to beat the Bucks, to beat the Lakers, to go ahead and win another championship, they couldn't have that. They couldn't have that fault, that chink in the armor, so to speak.
Yeah, the bottom line is that to become a championship-caliber team again, they don't need to be they can't be spending max level money on a guy who is basically a ball dominant point guard whose greatest asset is to put up points.
Right.
Because they already have that and he's the best in the world at that. So and that was why everyone knew that this was an awkward fit from day one, and why there were all the rumblings from day one that this was just an avenue to get
an
talent
asset grab.
An asset grab as a potential trade ship. And ultimately, you know, that's what it was. And it was still worth doing. You know, you look at basically what the Warriors got for Durant walking away, and they gave up Andre and they gave up a future first round pick. And obviously Durant was already leaving. And for that, you're now getting Andrew Wiggins, lightly protected 2021 first round pick, a 2021 probably early second round pick, and a luxury tax relief.
Right.
So that to me, if you're just looking at it in those terms, is a coup. And I think we should maybe judge it a little bit more by that measure than by just what your personal opinion is of Andrew Wiggins.
Well, let's talk about Andrew Wiggins' fit, and we're going to do that after the break. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. With amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventures, and incredible food, Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. Arizona has one-of-a-kind spring training experiences, 10 stadiums, 15 Major League Baseball teams, and 75-degree temperatures. All 10 stadiums are within 50 miles of each other, making it easy to see as much of the action as possible. If you've ever been to spring training, you know it gives you a great opportunity to meet the players and get autographs before the game. Then after the games, check out the amazing restaurants and bars nearby and enjoy live music from local and national artists. Plus, Arizona is known for its incredible landscapes and thrilling outdoor adventures. Go on hikes, hot air balloon rides, or skydiving. You can even go jet skiing or just take in that beautiful Arizona sunset. No matter what you do, Arizona has got you covered. And if you're bringing the kids along, Arizona is a fantastic destination for families, with family-friendly resorts and hotels that offer plenty of fun for kids of all ages, from water parks to horseback rides to games and organized activities. So plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. So you mentioned going into that break, Connor, that we need to judge this trade not just because... Not just based on what your individual opinion is on Andrew Wiggins, but that really is going to be what this comes down to, right? I mean, like the far-reaching part of this will be...
And whatever they do with that.
Exactly. It'll be Wiggins and whoever they get with the 2021 pick or whatever they turn that 2021 pick into. Yeah. And let's just talk about that. Let's start with the pick because it's top three protected in 2021, which is extremely lightly protected. I mean, you hardly ever see that sort of protection anymore, that light of a protection anymore. We're seeing top eight protected, top 10 lottery protected, something like the Warriors for D'Angelo Russell shipped off a top 20 protected pick that conveyed into a second round pick in 2024 or 2025 or something like that. Yeah. And that's what it's going to be now, obviously, because the Warriors are going into the lottery and they're going to have their own. They could have the number one pick this summer. So I think that was a huge win. And from my understanding, that was really the sticking point in this trade, that any machination of a D'Angelo Russell to Minnesota trade had to involve Andrew Wiggins coming back. Not only because the Warriors were hard capped and that was the easiest way to facilitate a trade, but also because their salaries were just the same salary. They make the same amount of money virtually. Yeah. It was the easiest way to facilitate a deal, especially a one-on-one deal as opposed to that four-team craziness.
And they were able to throw in, you know, Jacob Evans and Amari Spellman and get under the luxury threshold, which allows them to avoid the repeater tax, which is the equivalent of nearly $40 million extra dollars that they would have had to pay next season. So they're accomplishing a lot in this trade.
Yeah, they did. And they, you go into a situation like this as a front office with certain to-do list items. And I think for Bob Myers and this organization, what they wanted to get done was avoid that luxury tax, like you just mentioned, specifically the repeater tax, and reset the clock on paying a repeater tax in the future. Get draft assets and find a better fit for what you want to do, for this next iteration of the Warriors. And I think they hit on all three items, and that's good. But they really do need to still hit on Andrew Wiggins. Like, this whole entire thing, to me, is still sort of a meh trade. It's not a slam dunk. It's not a home run to me. And the floor to this thing could be pretty dramatically bad for this.
Just because of how much money they're spending.
Exactly. I mean, we're talking about Wiggins. $27 million up to $33 million. $27 million now. He's going to get paid up to $33 million in that final year.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Russell was a tradable contract. We saw him. He was wanted in the NBA. Right. Andrew Wiggins is not wanted. Yeah. He was only sort of part of this because his salary made sense.
I've read the word albatross today more than I've ever read that word in reference to his contract.
Yeah.
It's one of the
albatross worst Wiggins.
Yeah, it's one of the worst contracts in the NBA. And look, the Warriors don't need him to be an all-star.
No.
But they need him to be helpful, very helpful. They need him to be a key piece. And that's what they need.
And to look at him as, and you know, you mentioned what you're reading a lot today. I'm reading a lot of Andre Iguodala comparisons. And look, I think there's part of that is accurate. Part of that is you lose a guy like Andre Iguodala also with Kevin Durant. You're losing a lot of length on the perimeter. I asked Steve about this a few weeks ago about, like, I think it was before the Boston game. Boston has so much length on their perimeter.
Right.
And I asked him, like, do you sort of miss that, basically, in so many words? And he just kind of went on about how important that sort of stuff is. And that's what the Warriors were built on, was that sort of length for so many years. That's what got their dynasty to the point where it was. And Andrew Wiggins at least offers that. He's 6'8", 7-foot wingspan. He could play the three. He could even play some of the four. I think he's going to be a hybrid. And ideally, he could be a hybrid between doing some of the ball handling and stuff that Andre Iguodala did, but not to that genius level. Playing above average defense, being able to guard both forward positions, and maybe even a couple of guards here and there, being able to switch. And then maybe playing that Harrison Barnes power forward role when Draymond Green is playing at center. I think they need to find a way to utilize Andrew Wiggins' talents.
I agree with you. I don't think we've seen what Andrew Wiggins can be in the NBA. I think that he wasn't utilized super well in Minnesota. This is a guy who he has largely been a pick and roll guy, but I don't think he is a true pick and roll guy. I think he's a guy who's best rim cutting, working off the ball. And he's going to be able to do that with a tremendous amount of space when Steph and Klay come back.
To keep going back to this Andre Iguodala thing, I mean, you remember when he was in Philadelphia, he made an all-star team, but he was the primary ball handler there and a big-time scorer out there in the Eastern Conference. And then he goes to Denver, and he kind of plays a similar role, a little bit less of that, but a similar role. And then the Warriors end up trading a bunch of stuff to go get him, and then they kind of just they completely reformed Andre Iguodala's career, right? He was a sort of okay offensive player who wasn't as good defensively as was the Warriors because he was expending so much energy on the offensive end. He was asked to do way too much his entire career, but he was a high draft pick. He had the kind of he had the look and the feel of a ball dominant kind of guy. He kind of was the same size as LeBron. Like, why can't you do that? Andrew Wiggins got those. He was the hyped. He was like one of the most hyped guys since LeBron coming out of high school. 1 year at Kansas, Maple Jordan, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, he was kind of the consensus number one pick in that draft, and then was deservedly the rookie of the year in that draft class.
But he was asked to do too much. And has not
had any sort of achievement since then.
He
has not even had a player of the week nod. I mean, he's not only has he not come close to an all-star appearance, he's not even been a player of the week in the Western Conference. So, and I think that's largely because the people voting for this stuff just hate his game.
Also, they've consistently lost, and the 1 year that they won when Jimmy Butler was there, Jimmy Butler was really responsible for that. And Karl-Anthony Towns, I mean, there was a year where he was the best player on the team, and they were garbage, and they still got Karl-Anthony Towns with the number one pick the next year. So, I think that if the Warriors could sort of harness what he does well, the way if they can. First of all, it takes identifying what it is that he does well in a way that Minnesota did not, right? And then harnessing that in the same way that they harnessed what Andre Iguodala did well, and maybe they can get to that point.
And I do think that Andrew Wiggins, I don't know him personally, but I do know that he was unhappy in Minnesota and had been wanting to get out of that situation for years and felt a bit scapegoated and felt like he was treated unfairly there. And within minutes of the news breaking today, he goes and posts an Instagram story of Drake yelling "Yay Area," which is kind of like his little mini celebration of "Yes, I'm going to the Bay." Instead of a lot of guys in that situation would first post a "Goodbye Minnesota, thank you for all the great years." Yeah. He's celebrating actively immediately after the news.
He's ready to get the hell out of there.
He's so stoked to get the F out of Minnesota and put his parka in the closet and jump on a plane and get to the Yay Area. And I think that benefits the Warriors. You know, this is a guy who's going to be eager to, I don't want to say resuscitate his career because the guy's averaging over 22 points per game.
Sure.
But to show that he can be a winner and a helpful piece of a championship caliber team. And he's coming into a situation where he knows that he's not going to be the go-to option with Steph and Klay on the court.
Right.
And I think he's going to embrace that. And going along with that, he's going to have more freedom to try defensively because he's not going to have much pressure on him offensively.
He's going to have the best coach he's ever had in his career in Steve Curry. He's gone through four coaches in 5.5 seasons.
You're not a Thibodeau fan?
No. Thibodeau might be one of the most overrated coaches of the last decade.
Yeah, he did not get along with Thibodeau.
Nobody got along with Thibodeau except for Jimmy Butler, but only briefly. He's going to go to his best coach in years, the most stable organization he's ever known, and they're going to ask him to do, I think, three main things, right? It's going to be cut to the basket. You're going to have more space than you've ever had. I mean, we're not talking about space from the three-point line. We're talking about space to 30 feet out, and this is all yours. He's going to add a degree of athleticism that this team has not had in a very, very long time. Draymond Green's athleticism is waning. Steph Curry is and Klay Thompson. When they dunk, it's a joke. It's a meme. It's a social media moment when they dunk.
Klay Thompson's not athletic.
No, they're, this is not an
Seth athletic. Seth is actually more athletic than Clay.
Right. But. And so you've got Andrew Wiggins who can jump out of the building. He's probably he's got a lot of the athleticism is why he was drafted as high as he was. He's going to be able to put pressure on
vertical, man.
It's crazy. I mean, he's going to put pressure on the rim. He's going to put pressure on the defense in a very new – it's going to add a new element. He's going to have to hit spot-up three-pointers, which he could do at an okay above-average clip. That should only get better, you would imagine. Shooting tends to get better. And then, like you said, play better defense. And I think with all of these things involved, he'll be able to do that. And, you know, having guys like Steve Kerr and Draymond Green kind of coach him up should help too. There's a bunch of other stuff that happened at the trade deadline. We'll talk about that next. All right, Connor, so Andrew Wiggins was the big name that got moved. That's the new acquisition for the Warriors. A bunch of other stuff happened. We were actually covering the Brooklyn Nets game when news broke that Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson were going to get pulled from the rotation and they were going to get traded. They were later traded to Philadelphia in a deal that netted the Warriors 3 second-round picks over the next 3 years. And then the Warriors made a few other moves in that Andrew Wiggins trade. They also sent out Jacob Evans and Amari Spellman. And by the end of all of it, they only had 9 basketball players on their basketball roster.
They traded 6 rotation players in the past 2 weeks.
Right, including Willie Cauley-Stein.
Right.
So it was they completely flipped this roster.
And only got one player back.
And so I want to talk about Alec and Glenn and sort of that impact. But really quick, they filled out their roster by converting Marquise Chris and Kai Bowman from their two-way contracts to standard 15-man contracts. We know what we're getting there. Great. Hallelujah. Awesome. They signed Juan Toscano-Anderson, a nice little forward that they had in the G League. Feel good story. Oakland native. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Very cool. And then they signed Zach Norvell Jr., some Gonzaga dude, lefty shooting guard guy.
He's on a 10-day contract. Remember, he went off on the Warriors in preseason twice?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so.
I think he's an NBA player.
Well, I think with the 10-day contract, what you're going to see them do right now is say, all right, we'll give him 10 days. And if he looks good, we'll convert him into the 13th roster spot to a rest of season contract and then go ahead and sign that 14th guy to a 10-day contract. So they have 13 guys under contract now. They have until February 20th based on league rules to fill that 14th spot. So they'll have a good chance to look at Zach Norvell Jr. and then maybe he becomes the 13th guy and then they start that parade of 10-day contracts to stay under the luxury tax after that. So that's all fine and good. But the real big thing here is that you lose Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks. Do you think it was I think Alec Burks, we all understood, was going to be a casualty at the trade deadline. That one made sense. But Glenn Robinson, that one to me hurts a little bit more. I understand why you have to do it to duck the luxury tax, but he really seemed like he had a future on this team. And I've talked about it pretty often on this show. That's a tough one.
One. You love Glenn Robinson.
Yeah, man.
He's a great guy. And I think it was cool to see him resuscitate his career. I mean, this is a guy who had very minimal interest in free agency last summer and showed that he can be helpful on both sides of the court. I was really – we knew that he was a decent defender, but I was actually impressed with him offensively. He was very efficient. He made sound decisions. I thought his basketball IQ was really high. I thought he had a good feel for the game. He was actually a pretty good passer. Didn't make a ton of mistakes.
Yeah.
And then defensively held his own against some of the best – offensive players in the league, and that's quite a coup for a guy who's on a minimum contract. And I personally could have seen him in the rotation next season, but what I'm realizing the longer I cover the NBA is that it really just comes down to you have your core guys, and then everything else, it's really just it comes down to a numbers game. It's like, How does their contract fit into things? And he was just, because he was on a minimum deal, because it was a rental situation, he provided value at the trade deadline, and that's really the only reason he's not with us.
And I think back, I mean, he was an expiring contract on the minimum contract, like you said, but I think back to what the Miami Heat did post LeBron James, and they go and find like the James Johnsons and Deion Waiters on the minimum, and then they just fell in love with those guys and ended up signing them to huge 4-year deals that became really hard. They just traded it, those deals at the trade deadline. It cost them Justice Winslow to get off of those deals.
And I think he probably would have come back on a minimum. Like, he was so happy.
He probably would have, but it's also important not to just get enamored with your own guys.
Right.
And it kind of goes back to what the Warriors are doing here, right? They're betting on themselves to get the most out of Andrew Wiggins. They're also betting on themselves to go find the next Glenn Robinson. They're betting on themselves to go find the next Alec Burks, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're also hoping that someone like Damian Lee can maybe be the next Glenn Robinson, you know, and you have a couple of those guys who are going to be on the roster next season who you're hoping can be valuable rotation guys. But, you know, talking to people, it sounded like the Glenn Robinson trade actually hurt players on the team more than even D'Lo or Alec or anyone else because people really respected him. You know, he didn't talk a lot, but he was a leader in that locker room.
It was a tough one, and it was a surreal scene during that Brooklyn game. That's why they got blown out by 41 points. But look, this is the trade deadline. This is, you know, all these players all the time say, you know, the NBA is a business, and I understand that, et cetera. And look, yeah, I hope you do understand. If you didn't understand it, if it was just talk before, you'd understand it now.
I feel like the Warriors are making up for lost time because they hadn't had any sort of movement at the trade deadline in half a decade, and then now they're just doing it all. But league-wide, this was a crazy deadline.
You know, Andre Drummond plays for the Cavs now.
I've been pretty quiet, and this one was just nuts.
Andrew Wiggins lands in San Francisco on Friday night. We don't know if he'll be available for the Lakers game. I assume he probably will be. We'll see a whole new roster by the time
talk to
the
him,
Lakers.
Hopefully, shoot around on Saturday, I would think. But we're going to talk to Bob Myers tomorrow, get his thoughts.
Today.
It'll be... Yeah, I guess today, later today, wow. Get his thoughts on everything.
Yeah.
I don't expect a ton of – I mean, no. Bob's a great guy, but I don't expect a ton of insight on the specifics of why this happened now or
yeah,
what
he's
their
a pretty general
were.
Quote.
But I think we have a pretty good sense of why this is coming together the way it is.
And we're gonna keep talking about the lingering effects of everything that happened to this trade deadline for days, weeks, months. I mean,
this is the story of the rest of the season.
Well, it's setting the tone for the next 4 years for the Warriors.
Yeah.
It really is.
And selfishly, I told you earlier, I'm kind of glad because I was getting to the point where I was struggling to find things to say or write about this team. And now we're going to be spending the rest of the season introducing every new guy and getting in depth on Andrew Wiggins and his fit and his future. And it's going to be fun. So this is, you know, there's going to be a lot of losses, going to be a lot of bad basketball, but there are going to be good stories told. So hopefully our readers appreciate that.
Well, where can your readers find your good stories that you're going to be telling?
SFChronicle.com, on Twitter at @Con_Cron. I'm always available.
Thanks, Con Cron. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Thanks for listening.